How have you not seen this? Welcome back to Hell Have You Not Seen This. As always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I'm joined by guest host, Andy Boyle.
Hello!
And our guest, Peter Brick.
How's it going?
And Tim Myers.
Hi.
And we just finished watching Starship Troopers, the sci-fi action war film from Paul Verhoeven, who of course gave us Total Recall, and RoboCop, a couple other great sci-fi films, featuring what probably should have been a promising kickoff for actor Casper Van Dien, who was great in the movie, but it was not that. Also tied into a Robert A. Heinlein novel of the same name. Movie just full of propaganda pieces tying very closely into fascism, militarism, all things like that, which of course we're going to get into. Pretty successful movie. Pretty popular. The only theatrical release in the Starship Troopers franchise spawned an animated film and two sequels, all of which were direct to DVD. And oddly enough, this one is literally the only one of four Starship Troopers films that's not on Netflix for some reason. So, don't know what the deal is there.
Yeah, come on, get with it, Netflix.
Come on. Tim, how have you not seen this?
This movie came out, when I was like 97?
Yes.
Okay, so I remember when I was like 10, I had this neighbor kid who was just this really weird guy, really into like 80s music and just kind of creeped me out all the time, and he just loved Starship Troopers, so I just decided I would never see it.
Fair enough. It's a legit reason.
Yeah.
Peter, how have you not seen this?
What year did this come out again?
97.
Yeah, I was like 7 years old, so there's no way I was seeing this.
Right time.
Yeah.
Aw. Yeah. Little Peter, you want to watch Violence?
No, yeah, you want to see some breasts? No.
You want to see some breasts?
I feel
breasts.
Funny.
Yeah.
I had a friend then, his parents let him watch all the movies that I wasn't allowed to. I remember him talking about Starship Troopers, and I was like, oh, that's probably really cool, but it's rated R, so I can't
watch
it. And then by the time I was old enough, it wasn't a movie on my radar that I was like, I need to see that.
It's weird to me that this movie is rated R, because it seems like it would be for, like, 10-year-olds. Like, 10-year-olds would really enjoy it. Or
yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. But it's incredibly violent. Like, RoboCop levels of violence.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if it came out now, they would probably demand it be PG-13.
Would they do like yeah, because it's like, because I think we've been so desensitized to the level of violence because of movies like this. We're like, that's what R was in 97.
Yeah. Well, I think the weird thing too, like, you look at a movie like Men in Black, which at least in terms of blowing the shit up out of aliens, just as violent, but gets away with it because you never really see violence done to people.
Way less boobs in Men in Black.
Also,
only difference.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm going to compare this to Pacific Rim a lot because I saw it pretty recently.
Yeah.
But it just seems like a movie like Pacific Rim is very comparable, but there's not nearly as much violence or nudity in it. And is Pacific Rim rated? Is that PG-13?
Pacific Rim is PG-13. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think studios would make the active choice to tone it down today.
Yeah.
Do you know how much money it made when it originally came out?
I can check.
It probably made a lot.
Yeah, I remember it was successful. It wasn't huge. It made $121.2 million against a budget of $105.
It made money.
So,
yeah, it made money.
Yeah.
Couple bucks.
So not an Avengers or a Dark Knight, but it was not a flop.
Movie too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. No, not even a summer movie. November.
Oh, okay. November. Feel good Christmas movie.
Yeah. It's right up there in good company with a movie like Alien vs. Predator Requiem.
Yeah. Yep. Or Mrs. Doubtfire, you know?
Yep.
The best movies ever.
There's only two movies.
I want to get this out before I forget it. I was reading some background stuff on the movie while we were watching it. Rue McClanahan, who played Blanche Devereaux on The Golden Girls, is in this movie for literally 30 seconds as a science teacher who is unrecognizable. And that's so bizarre to me. Like, that's probably the last role she played before she died.
Oh, thanks for bumming us all out.
Thanks
for letting us know we were looking at dead people on the screen. Oh my god!
You didn't even know who Rue McClanahan was when I
I'm not as old as you. And my parents had better TV watching, apparently, when I was younger, so...
There's literally a 2-year difference. And calm your tits. Everyone knows about Golden Girls.
I remember my mom watching it. I didn't understand it.
But you know that
while you were in utero.
Yeah. But if I say Golden Girls, you recognize it as a thing that existed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Like, what's her name? Betty White.
Betty White.
That's about all I know.
It's geriatric Sex in the City.
Betty White, Rue McClanahan, Estelle Getty. And,
which has a lot to do with Starship Troopers.
And
Arthur. Because
we all have to decide which Golden Girl we are.
Yeah, you have to decide which Golden Girl you are and whether or not you're going to be a citizen or if you're going to be a civilian in Golden Girls.
Well, Rue McClanahan clearly opted to be a civilian because she was a science teacher.
Well, no, but I think she was wearing glasses and it looked like her face was scarred. So I'm thinking because what I pictured was she's like, listen,
retired
kids, I've seen some shit. All right? And it's not just old man ball sacks. It's,
that makes sense.
I saw some bugs. But they don't set up in the movie, right, that bugs had previously attacked...
No, they haven't. The attack on Buenos Aires is the first, act of aggression from them.
Yeah, see, that's what I find really weird, because, like, clearly people have lost limbs, and I'm like, what were you fighting?
Yeah.
Like, what were you fighting previously?
Well, and they hint it, like, they set it up, they open up in the beginning, they're like, as far as, like, expanding the Federation of Planets and everything, that they encountered the Klondike system.
Isn't Star Trek.
Look, it's still the Federation, alright? So pump the brakes, you fucking nerd.
It's the Fascist Federation.
Look.
Actually, some of those uniforms were a little SS.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially the guy from How I Met Your Mother.
Neil Patrick Harris wearing literally a Gestapo officer's coat.
Yeah.
And the hat. And even the Federation logo.
Yeah, the logo is meant to be
very
like
similar to the SS. So, yeah. Very clearly.
Paul Verhoeven. I think the guy knows what he's doing.
Well, also, I was... one of the other things, obviously, like, drawing from things like Triumph of the Will, there was one of the propaganda pieces that was essentially a shot-for-shot remake, but, you know, with bugs, of part of Triumph of the Will for the propaganda promos in between.
For those of us that were not in Germany in the 30s, what is Triumph of the Will?
It was a movie about Nazis. A documentary about Nazis.
Okay.
Come on, people.
All right.
Everyone knows what Wikipedia is. I don't have to screw with everything. All right.
Cool. My bad for wanting to give the listeners a little extra taste of knowledge. Your font of knowledge.
Dustin only pulls from a 30s Nazi Germany demographic. So,
you know,
yeah.
No, this podcast is very good. I enjoy it very much. Can I talk more about the actual film?
Triumph of the Will and Modern Times. Or no. The Great Dictator. That's the one I'm thinking of with Charlie Chaplin playing a Hitler type. Yeah.
It was just, there were some really dark themes behind those propaganda videos.
Oh, absolutely.
But it still felt really light the whole time. Which
Very satirical.
Yeah, it's like they're making it, it's like, we're crushing bugs. Look at the crazy woman's face. That's like, yay, kids, war, violence, it's good.
Yeah, or the shot of the dog impaled on a piece of rebar. And then the distraught guy just saying, the only good bug is a dead bug.
And I want to be
Rusty!
Like, if this was like, so that, you know, they had to have, like, a director on that set who's, like in the world of this, they're like, okay, dude, listen, I know this isn't your dog, but we need you, I know you just lost your family, but here's the deal, we need you to look at this dog and then look in the camera and say, the only good bug is a dead bug. Can you do that for me? You just do that? Just use the emotion of your dead family and pretend that this dog is your dead. Trust me, people care more about dead dogs.
I was sadder when I saw the dog than when I saw the dead people.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised, like, because the propaganda stuff has, like, such deep, intense, like, subtext.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why are the characters so, like, one-dimensional in the movie?
Do you want to know more?
Because I think the idea is that the themes and the subtext is more important than the actual characters.
Yeah.
Like, they're meant to be little more than, like, just kind of a lens for us.
Yeah, it's totally a commentary on the idea of, like, ultra-nationalism as a correct way of showing your country's patriotism.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I just feel like...
Do you, Tim?
I just feel like my critique of the movie is that the characters are so... like one-sided that it just distracts from like all of the themes that are going on from the movie, and a lot of their actions throughout the movie make absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
Well, like which ones, for example?
Like, you know, like that one girl, she like kills a bug. She's like, "Yeah, I killed a bug," and then she gets destroyed, and then there's like people dying, and everyone's smiling, and it's just like none of the characters seemed human at all.
Well, no, and that's the idea, is that they're not.
Yeah,
like, they've been desensitized because of the nationalism and like fascism of their world.
Yeah. That's very much the idea there, I think.
Yeah.
And also, I think that the themes of the movie do work better because we're not distracted by a Daniel Day-Lewis playing the leader of the Roughnecks and distracting us because he yells everything.
I mean, there's just these action tropes you expect from action movies. For example, Johnny Rico, you have the guy who's like, "Oh, I'm not really sure if I want to be a soldier," but then over the course...
Yeah, yeah.
I need to have an arc. I need to change.
Yeah, yeah.
Look,
change.
Man, hey, everybody's read that Joseph Campbell book. They know the drill. They know
everybody
all about
actually has it. Not everyone's read...
The worst line in the movie was, "I don't want to go on vacation."
Or do you want to live forever?
Come on, you apes!
I don't want to go on vacation. All I can think of was James Vanderbeek in Varsity Blues going, "I don't want your life.
I don't want your vacation. I want another vacation."
So yeah, I think it works because of those characters, I think it's very much, and even like Verhoeven's other stuff, like RoboCop and Total Recall, like there's great themes going on in those movies, and I think they work because he approaches them as B movies.
Yeah, the main theme being Detroit is terrible.
I think my problem, I mean, I'm just looking at this movie too much through, like, a Pacific Rim frame.
Yeah.
Where the characters' relationships is pretty much the entire... it's not really a satire of society at all. It's just like, oh, respect and honor.
Well, but that's what science fiction generally does. Science fiction is supposed to be, like, this futuristic way of pointing out problems with the now.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I feel like... that's not always how Hollywood action movies are.
No.
No, they like this when they.
Not everything can be Die Hard.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
We want it to be.
Have that dude pop up and Family Matters dad saves the day. Yeah. His character needed to have a good resolution because he, you know, blew that kid away earlier on, as we learned.
Yeah.
All I can think of right now is that Annie Lennox walking on broken glass song.
Why?
Because they did
Die Hard.
Die Hard.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. I was like, "How does
that?"
That was too mental.
I thought it was really. I just loved how when Denise Richards' character, what was her name?
Carmen.
Let's call Carmen. When Carmen sends the letter or the video letter to him on like the mini disc, because that was the coolest technology. Like, this is gonna last via AT&T, who hasn't changed their logo since that movie was made, or in the future apparently. The letter, his name is Johnny Rico, and it's literally a Dear John letter, because that's his name.
Yeah.
Also, that's exactly how it's phrased in the Wikipedia plot synopsis.
Boom.
Carmen sends Johnny a Dear John letter via telecom or whatever.
And I love it. Everyone's like, "Ooh, look at your girl." Oh, guys, he's going through a moment. Let's give him his privacy.
Let's walk out of here.
Ooh, we should walk away from this.
Yeah. This movie filled with a lot of great B actors. You got Clancy Brown playing drill instructor Zim, fucking great character actor. He's in the movie for 5 minutes, crushes every scene he's in. Then you have Dean Norris, Hank from Breaking Bad, popping, who I'd completely forgotten about. Has maybe 6 lines over the course of 3 minutes, and then Michael Ironside as the teacher Radcheck, and then later the leader of the Roughnecks, and he's fucking great. I love Michael Ironside so much.
Did you guys ever play the Nintendo 64 game Jet Force Gemini?
Yes, it's very similar to this.
I feel like this was Jet Force Gemini the movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, which I thought the action sequences were surprisingly good for when this movie came out.
Yeah, the CGI was really good.
Yeah, very well done.
Like, all of the bugs looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even comparing to a lot of stuff now.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it was kind of because it was so hard to do back then, where they're like, "We're going to do the best damn job."
Yeah.
Like, even when you watch, like Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, still, Frighteners.
Yeah, there's, like, a handful of stuff. But now it's just, like, like, a kid with, like, a really good, like, with Final Magic Cut Pro Avid can do this in, like, a weekend. And they're like, whatever.
Yeah, you compare something like this to I Am Legend from, like, 2007. Yeah, terrible.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. Like, I think it's more the taking pride in their work. But now, like, it's so effortlessly done. And now, like even, like, Gunshot. Like, even Scorsese is doing CGI stuff in his movies now. I was like, just use a squib, you fucking pussy. But, yeah, like, so much of it just, like... And this has come up so many times on this podcast, too. Just the discussion of practical effects versus CGI. And it's a bummer to go back and see. Like, almost 20 years ago, it looked pretty fucking good. There's no reason it should have deteriorated as badly as it has over the years.
It just costs a lot.
It's not as much fun, either. Like, I mean, a lot of reasons why, like... This is really out there, but, like, someone like Wes Anderson, like, people, like, love his movies because he just, like, plays with miniatures, and that can seem refreshing in terms of, like, CG movies.
That's fine, but everybody should fucking do that then. Like, stop making your movies look like shit.
Yeah.
I wonder if also part of it is you have, like, this long Hollywood tradition of these people that had decades of experience knowing how to do this stuff, and then because of CGI... I bet a lot of those folks might have gone out of work. And they might not have, like... So the knowledge base might have gone
away.
Might not
have passed along.
And so now if they're like, how do we make stuff look as cool as it did in Blade Runner? Do it... This, like, hey, does anyone know how to do that anymore?
Does anyone know how to build a set?
Yeah. Listen, we're just going to put up a green screen and make another Sin City movie. Is that cool?
Cool. No, it was not cool. It absolutely was not fucking cool. Well,
yeah, and you'll see that stuff happen, like, with the Lord of the Rings movies. Like, they'll make these awesome sets, and now with The Hobbit,
they
it's like...
so bad.
It's like Phantom Menace, but they took out Jar Jar and putting Gollum, which is fine because Gollum's better than Jar Jar.
Yeah,
but
it's still a
in terms of CG, it's like,
and also like that's literally that's what 7 years that passed between the last Lord of the Rings and the first Hobbit movie.
Yeah,
and then there's such that drop off. Like, and there's even been interviews. There was an article on Cracked where they were doing like it was like directors who clearly just have given up or something. Peter Jackson like has gone on record to say is like, yeah, I know that these ones don't look as good. We don't feel like putting in the effort that we did on those. I was like, why would you ever go on record and say that?
Oh my gosh.
Like, absolutely, the huge, like, nerds are going to go, but, like, that pisses me off.
That's heartbreaking.
And, like, and that's such a bummer. Because he's so good at crafting, like, these gigantic, like
it felt like a cash grab.
Film skin.
Listen, listen, if that was on NewYorkTimes.com, I'd believe it. But Crack.com, I don't know if we can trust. Now, maybe if it was on a BuzzFeed, we might be able to...
Oh, you get out of here. Crack 2 is diligent as shit about citing
their
sources.
Or perhaps if something was on, I heard this, ChicagoTribune.com, it might be a worthwhile...
Hey, look. That's a conflict of interest. Don't plug your former employers on this podcast.
All right. I remember seeing Van Helsing.
Oh my god, Van Helsing!
I didn't
so
see
bad.
It by choice, but I think I saw Troy first. I was like, I want to see another movie.
Yeah,
Wolverine literally made you go see. He's like, you, hey Mike, you gotta go see this movie for me.
Oh, hey, the original Sabretooth was in one. I'll go see Wolverine in this other one.
And just everything about that movie felt so lazy. Like it was supposed to be this huge movie, but the CG was awful. The accents weren't even on.
Nope.
Just everything about it was so lazy that, like, I walked out in 10 minutes.
Oh, but, it's
like,
terrible. It's one of the worst things I've ever
seen. Brothers Grimm?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, similar. Yeah. So much CGI.
And that's weird because that's Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
Like, that's a good filmmaker who does great movies.
Yeah.
And that's, man. Well, not as bad as Hansel and Gretel Witch Hunter, though, but Brothers Grimm is still pretty bad.
Oof.
I mean, they can't all be Brazil, I guess.
No, they could. Or even the Fisher King.
Yeah. I mean, they could be.
Yeah.
<That's> then true. No one would go to the movies.
Yeah.
That's a little weird.
That's very true. Some of the other things, they're also, like, in terms of the militaristic stuff, the drill camp and, like, so much of the propaganda just smacks of like, Sparta. Like, that kind of mindless militaristic stuff. Like, the stuff that you see, like, in 300 and shit, where, like, essentially it's, like... And they're pushed, like... And they're indoctrinated, clearly, at a very young age. Like, their high school is teaching them, it's like, hey, if you want to count as anyone, you have to go to war.
Yeah, like a vote as an attack. Like, that was probably the most powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I did think it was really interesting that the guy who'd clearly seen some shit...
Yeah.
Was the one who's just like, you don't have to do this, whatever, it's your choice.
And then he re-ups.
Yeah. And then he re-ups. And he's like, he made his choice.
Yeah. And I do like, though, that line he has to Johnny later, where he says, the only true freedom you have is making your own choices, or something like that. And I thought that was really good.
I really liked how the movie, I think, had like a really positive view of gender stuff, where they're just like, they didn't really talk, like, there was no bad-mouthing the fact that someone was a woman.
Yeah.
And everyone showered together, and so they're, and then, like, when the dude resigned, it was, like, a lady who was like, the sky commander of tomorrow.
Yeah, the sky marshal. Yeah.
The sky captain of tomorrow.
Yeah.
another great CGI movie.
Let's take Jude Law out of this.
And I really... No, Jude Law could have made this film better. He would have been a bug with his receding hairline. boom!
He found the brain bug.
Boom! Found the joke. But anyway, he... yeah, take that, handsome man beloved by millions. But no, he...
centers.
Exactly. I really did like that, because I think if it's supposed to be like a commentary, it's like, hey, here's the part about the future they got right.
Yeah.
But they got all this other stuff wrong. But hey, maybe we should be more like this.
Yeah. So.
The GameCube video discs didn't.
Yeah, the GameCube
sell you on the future.
Yeah, they're big monitors they had to have for everything.
I also like, you mentioned the AT&T thing. Part of me thinks of that as like the Taco Bell thing from Demolition Man, where Taco Bell is the only restaurant in the future. And like, it kind of forces you to assume AT&T, much like many real communications companies are doing, are just absorbing all of these companies until they're like, it's like, oh yeah, no, Marvel. Oh no, that's under a Disney umbrella. That's under another umbrella. Like, and it's just all absolved into one thing.
America's just all going to be Comcast in a few years.
Yeah, so. And I want to know, did they're like, hey, listen, Sprint, you know, we're going to have AT&T in this movie. Or we could have Sprint. Or they go to, like, I think then, like, MCI was still, like, they go to all these, who do you want to be in the movie, huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's better product placement than a lot of product placement I've seen. Like, my favorite is, did you guys see SWAT?
Yes.
There's a scene where a Buddhist guy is like, oh man, I've tried to renounce all worldly pleasures, but I can't help drinking the great taste of Dr. Pepper. What? What?
Turns the camera, holds it perfectly. Yeah. Like, his eye and teeth glisten.
That's pretty good. I think one of my favorites was a Mountain Dew soda machine and Transformers turning evil in the presence of an Energon cube and attacking people.
Do you own SWAT? Because I would love to do a podcast on that movie.
I do not own SWAT.
No, just a completely every time you have to watch SWAT with someone new. So what do you think about SWAT? Yeah.
However, I do own it. Or no, I don't own it. I don't own it. I literally just told you I don't own it. It's on Netflix, I think.
You know what? Dustin can't be trusted. There's one thing we've learned.
Because I watched it sometime in the last year. I watched it fairly recently.
I've seen it so many times. I don't really know why, but I'm just fascinated by it. I saw it in the theaters.
Because you love Jeremy Renner.
Now, I was Colin Farrell's last
guest. As someone who I recall, I don't know if this was something that was cut out. I swear I saw this on a DVD when I was in high school or something.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a scene with Carmen Electra, like, where
in
she...
Starship Troopers?
No, Carmen Electra. Wow. I'm sorry. Carmen character, Denise Richards.
Denise Richards.
Was there a scene, and maybe you'd know this, Dustin, where it's like Rico is, like, talking to her, and the other captain dude walks in or something like that, and she doesn't have her top on or something like that? I swear I remember this being in this movie, and then they cut it out because they never show the Carmen's character, Denise Richards' character, and the other haircut, like, hooking up ever. And so I'm like, I'm wondering if that was ever like a thing that we were supposed to. I don't know why I went on this tangent.
No. It said, I was reading, it said there was something in the original cut, like, that had Carmen and Rico, like, kissing afterwards, but that was cut. As far as the topless thing, I don't know. Maybe you're thinking of Wild Things with Neve Campbell.
No, I'm definitely not. I would 100% remember this had to deal with, like, because I remember the Videocom link.
Yeah, listen.
We're going to look it up afterward, and now you are, too, because I recall it's a nice image you get to see of, keep on wanting to call her Carmen Sandiego.
Are you sure you're not thinking of Demolition Man when Sylvester Stallone gets a video call from a topless woman?
I am 100% sure.
Okay.
Listen, I'm getting my right dystopian future, okay?
Okay.
think Demolition Man has been brought up every single podcast
I've
done.
That's just Demolition Man is fucking amazing. I wish I could do more than one episode on Demolition Man.
It's okay.
Look, agree to disagree.
Don't deal with it. You're wrong.
I will say, like, going back to what we were talking about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
The most powerful moment of propaganda, I think, in that movie was, like, right at the end, where it's like, oh, they just did the mind reading of the bug, but they're like, oh, we're still doing these awesome war commercials. Like,
yeah.
It's like, oh, you're still excited about being in war.
Yep.
I also liked how they're like, oh, they have emotions too. We should still kill them.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's afraid.
Hooray! Hooray! It is a thinking creature. We should destroy all of them.
If you're not doing your job, I'll shoot you. It's pretty much the mentality.
Also, I think it's really, really weird that, like, this is such a militaristic culture. You'd think they'd be very good, very smart at tactics. And they're like, let's just go right in there. I bet we can get them.
Now let's run back.
Let's
go on the lowest part.
Just land. Just pile on in there and shoot from the hip.
Well, that's what I love, too. Like, you made the comment about, like, Normandy and the D-Day stuff, and that's literally what that first Battle of Condatu is. It's a fucking massacre.
But it's not... So expendable. Like, what this was would be if we, like, airlifted millions of people into Berlin and we're like, I hope this works out.
Yeah.
Instead, what we did is what they later do. We went in through France.
Yeah.
So that's, like, what they did on Planet...
Planet P.
Planet
P. Was the second planet.
You know, P stands for penis. Yeah. What you should do if you know anything about the military.
Yeah.
Get them on the outside... Come on, pincer attack, start moving in. Listen, I never studied military stuff, but I have seen a lot of movies.
Well, I think it's like... it's so weird, too.
Yeah,
like,
never...
it's what, like, because especially, like, watching this now, post 9/11, it's weird because... Well, no, seriously. Like, I'm getting to a point. This isn't a shitty joke. There's that moment where they find out that Buenos Aires was attacked, and then it's literally just people running to, like, go suit up. And the morning, like, when you saw the towers fall, like, wherever you were, like, I was in school, like, so many people, like, were crowding around the TVs, and then, like, every fucking jock jarhead was like, I'm gonna fucking enlist. Yeah. Like, and everybody was talking about how they were gonna, like, fucking sign up. As if, like, a plane was waiting outside of the school right then to take them over to, like, start fighting. And it's fucking scary, like, to... Like, that's a real thing, that mentality.
I wish they could have shown the politics of it. Like, so it could get more... Like, it's clearly a fascist society, but you don't really see...
Yeah, everything,
like,
you get
how
from the
war
ground
is declared. You only see it from the soldier's perspective.
Yeah. But again, like, I think that's kind of cool, too, because, like, that's the majority of people, I feel like. That's the perspective you get.
Yeah.
And then Generico even has that line later, like, fleet does the flying, mobile infantry does the dying. It's like, no, that makes sense.
There's just a great This American Life episode between the lines.
I think the fleet does the flying, the infantry does the dying. It's just a really good rhyming couplet. I think that's the main reason it's in there.
Well, yeah, but it's also completely fucking accurate, too. And then, like...
The fleet did a lot of the dying.
They did some of the dying.
They did a lot of... They did the more expensive dying.
It's kind of their fault,
because
they got those big blue things shooting at them, and nobody's moving, like...
It's like open field warfare from, like, the Revolutionary War. Yeah. They're like, no, things are shooting at us, we're just going to keep marching towards
you. We're in space, and we can, like, approach this planet from any
literally
angle.
Any direction.
Like, man,
we also have smaller ships that we're not using.
It's not like they're playing fucking Gattaca or Space Invaders or Gattaca, fucking Galaga.
They're trying to get somebody else's blood and pretending to be not,
like,
crippled.
It's not like they're playing Galaga, like, where you can only move left and right. It's like, no, there are so many directions you can go in.
Here's what I really don't understand. So you can have a little tiny mobile nuke, which seems pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And you have these huge, massive ships that could have, say, I don't know, a big nuke.
Yeah.
And then you could just stay far away, throw the nuke at Klondathu. Hey, guess what? Well, we're good. No more bad bugs. And they're like, no, let's send people on the ground. I don't get that. Of course, that would mess up the whole movie. And they also make that joke. They're like, we just hit a button and launch a nuke. And they're like, we gotta go in there.
Well, yeah, but that definitely changes by the halfway point, when they find the outpost that got massacred, because then they find out about the brain bug.
Yeah.
And they even, like, because Rico tries to call in that order to just fucking nuke it.
But even still, like, they can just, they could have just nuked everything, and then, hey, bugs are gone.
But then you might have, like, the intelligence agency, like, we want to know how this brain works.
Yeah.
But if they're all gone, does it matter?
Or take into account, how much does a regular nuke cost?
I don't think cost has anything in this. If this is an incredibly fascist society, there it's probably more about, like, getting shit done and your service to your country.
To a point, but it also, like, I think with the AT&T thing, that also lends itself to the idea that corporate interest is very much a part of that too, like a military complex.
But that's the big part about fascism, is it's like it's the corporatism, if I recall correctly. It's basically like corporations run stuff and then the government runs on top of it with a lot of like nationalistic fervor.
Yeah.
And whereas with this, all we really saw about the corporatism was just quickly we saw AT&T.
One video link.
Yeah, one video link. It's
yeah.
Like, would you like to know more?
Yeah. I think it could swing either way. There's a, like Tim said, with the political stuff, there's a lot of shit that we don't know about this society beyond, like, the very general stuff that it is very
I'm sure that's all Starship Troopers 2.
Yeah.
And Starship Troopers 3, The Return.
It's like episode 1. It's like, we need to know about the fair trade conflicts.
Yeah.
Sort of lay of base.
Yeah. How far in the future is this that everyone's hanging out in Buenos Aires and speaking English?
By fair trade, I meant free trade.
I'm not talking about coffee. All right, NAFTA.
Yeah. Okay. Fair trade, bought the poodoo.
Here's a separate topic, but this is just a theory I have. What's Johnny Rico's name in real life?
Casper Van Diem is the actor.
Wow. So, Casper Van Diem, my theory is he gets cast in this movie because he wears a helmet and he still has a distinct face.
Yeah.
You remove him from movies with helmets, he has less of a need to be in any other movie.
Well, I was reading too, the role initially offered and turned down by Mark Wahlberg and James Marsden.
Wow.
I don't even know who James Marsden is.
James Marsden was Cyclops in the X-Men movies.
Oh, okay.
Good move from. Well, I don't know. Probably not.
I like James Marsden. I think he's a very good actor. I don't like what I don't know, maybe he turned this down to do Disturbing Behavior. That classic that everyone remembers.
And
what
date?
What?
Or be Liz Lemon's boyfriend?
Oh, that was years after though. He could have done Starship Troopers. And
oh wait, spoiler alert for 30 Rock. yeah, I think I kept on noticing every time they do get really close, he has like a scar on his chin. That is almost where like the cleft should be, and I just keep on like, that's why you're not a star.
Can't look away from it.
I think part of it too, like the Mark Wahlberg thing obviously kind of shatters us, but with the Casper Van Dien, it's very much a vanilla, kind of a blank slate. Kind of like Charlie Hunnam in Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this character...
He has more personality than Charlie Hunnam.
Oh, absolutely he does. Definitely.
Charlie Hunnam is amazingly bland in Pacific Rim.
But I think this movie falls apart the second you put, like, an Arnold Schwarzenegger... Or a Vin Diesel type.
Too much charisma.
Because especially you have to get like an actor that's not as well known.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, and at this point too, Mark Wahlberg would either have just done Boogie Nights or just about been doing Boogie Nights.
So you'd be watching this movie the entire time, being like, "Man, this Rico guy, he's got a big old Johnny."
Yeah,
that's real.
Big old Johnny.
But that's the thing too, is like I feel like Boogie Nights was Wahlberg's like first really huge like breakout role where you're like, oh, this guy's like a legitimate like good actor. I still think they were very clearly going for a blank slate type character. It's just that the more well known of those, both of them turned it down.
You can't use that as a springboard to an acting career though. Like what else is that Charlie Hunnam guy in?
Sons of Anarchy.
Oh.
Or Superman the first one.
Wheelchair. Not Charlie Hunnam.
Wheelchair guy. I can't remember his name. Wheelchair Superman.
Christopher Reeves?
Yeah.
Wheelchair Superman.
Well, that's why they picked him.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why they cast him, was because they're like, we can't get a super famous guy in this role.
Yeah. But Superman also has a very iconic look, too.
But what else did he do after that?
There were some other not very good movies, but I imagine he did just fine off Superman, unlike the creators of Superman.
Yeah, we know.
The poor guys.
What are your thoughts on the movie?
I liked it. I liked watching a bunch of people just pile in. Like, I like how they didn't... Like, I don't think they used, like, CG fillers for, like, the mobs of soldiers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, every guy you see on screen is a real-life person, and they just gave them props, guns, and they just piled them onto this set, and they're just, like, flooding out and just going nuts. And I love those kind of movies. Where it's just, you've got mobs of people in these big, epic, played-out scenes just going ham.
That is a phrase that doesn't get used as often as it should.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Man, going ham up in here.
Maybe the first time it's been used on this podcast. Yeah. Took us 70 episodes, but we finally got to it.
Milestone. It's a milestone. Milestone.
Oh, man, we haven't even mentioned that Carver from The Wire is fucking in this movie. Which blew my mind.
Yeah, did you
and a guy from Breaking Bad.
Hank. Well, I mentioned him. Yeah. Dean Norris.
Did you guys know that sometimes actors have previous roles before they're known in other stuff?
No, I did not.
Did you?
I did not.
That is a mind-blowing thing to me as well. Right.
There's no need to be a cunt. It doesn't mean
making a great joke, you have taken it too far.
It doesn't mean that I can't be surprised when they pop up in something I didn't remember.
I get it.
I'm telling mom.
I get it. You Columbus people think you can just use terrible words left and right.
Oh my god.
What was the Diaz? What's her name? Dez? Dizzy?
Dizzy Flores.
Dizzy. What else has she been in?
Dina Myers is the actress's name, and I know that I recognize the name.
I think she's in Scandal.
Possibly.
You got a solid TV knowledge base you're bringing to this podcast.
I gotta tell you this. Never seen an episode of Scandal. Know a lot about it, because I have a lot of friends on Facebook.
She was in the Saw movies.
Oh!
So that's one of them. Oh, she was in Johnny Mnemonic, which I actually watched recently. Not good.
Nope.
Not at all. Terrible. She was in Star Trek Nemesis, a couple of the Saw films, and then just she was in Piranha 3D. Guys, Piranha 3D.
Wow.
Well, the guy from Sliders gets his dinger bit off.
She is not in Scandal. She was in an episode of Scoundrels.
Ah, however. See?
Scoundrels.
I was close.
I've never heard of that.
I don't know what that is.
she has been in an alarming number of one-off episodes of CBS dramas. Or general. Like, let's say The Mentalist, Castle, Criminal Minds, NCIS. A whole bunch of stuff.
Where they're like, we need someone pretty who will die before the end of the second act.
No, Dina Myers, get her on the horn,
get
guys.
They need curly hair.
Oh, curly hair for days.
No, they don't have a budget for a wig.
Yeah, curly hair. We haven't talked about Jake Busey at all.
Oh my gosh,
guys.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Jake Busey is
the comic relief of the movie.
The comic relief, gifted violinist.
Yeah. Yep. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that very much. Yeah. Actually, I loved his, like, space violin, because they actually have those. Like, violins. It's like, oh, wow, that's cool.
But like, his violin was, like, that see-through plastic, like, Dave Grohl's guitar in the 1x1 Foo Fighters video.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's kind of nifty. That's a neat little violin.
I like how he's comic relief, but never really makes any jokes.
Yeah.
He's just weird.
Hey! He's just kind of a...
Whoa!
Which, I mean, really is the role either Busey...
Man, I got some teeth!
He got a throwing knife thrown into his hand.
Yep.
He said something, and, like, some just chick just punches him out.
Here your lieutenant's a real ball buster.
No one says things about the guy.
You don't talk about the guy like that.
Yeah.
I bet we'll reveal who the guy is in a moment, and it's going to be a big deal.
It's my high school chemistry teacher.
The knife in the hand gave way to one of my favorite recurring jokes, which I wish had happened more, which was just Clancy Brown yelling, "Medic!" Every time he beat the shit out of somebody.
I'm gonna say that I'm getting kind of sick of sci-fi movies using as their enemies like real animals, but that are also aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
like Pacific Rim again, have like Street Sharks as villains.
The Street Sharks.
A very real animal that is a scourge.
Entirely too jawsome. Just too jawsome to handle.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Avatar is as a Mewtwo from Pokemon.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I never even thought of that. I thought they were just blue cat people.
Same thing.
Arachnids.
Frequently
used space spiders,
beetle spiders.
I think bugs just work. They're good. And Peter actually mentioned this during the movie. I think StarCraft owes a great debt to this movie.
Yes. Yeah. What's up, Zergs?
Yeah, the Terran and the Zergs.
Yeah.
And then they're like, "Oh man, we should probably throw one more race in so Robert Heinlein doesn't like sue our dicks off." We'll throw in some telepaths called the Protoss, which realistically are probably like from a Whitley Strieber book or something similar.
Yeah, or like the ghosts from StarCraft, like calling it a nuke.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed I know what you guys are talking about.
I'm embarrassed I just realized I've never heard Protoss pronounced. I was like, oh, Protoss. That's how it's always been in my brain.
Protoss. Step up your StarCraft game, man. Come on.
You know what? I spent hours watching other people play StarCraft.
Oh, God.
I've never played it myself.
It's real big in South Korea. It's like the NFL in South Korea.
Yeah. Not big in North Korea.
Holy shit. I'm glad you said that.
The concussion and sex scandals in StarCraft are getting out of control.
That reminds me of something else. Like, in all futuristic sci-fi films, unless like it's a post-apocalyptic setting, sports still exist in some form.
Oh yeah.
Because like it's in this.
They were like playing Canadian football. Yeah. It was like 50 yards.
The arena football league like is back.
That was like some Canadian like ninja parkour. Yeah. Over you football.
Like that's insane.
Were they in high school or college?
High school. They were in high school.
So they're grown ass looking.
Yeah. So that's what I think is so weird. It's like you're 19 and you're a lieutenant.
Yeah.
Like, that's... They don't even allow that in the real world.
Well, I mean... The mobile infantry probably has a much higher mortality rate than our real army.
Yeah.
It's kind of
high
turnover.
Do you know that for a fact? Do you know?
When's the last time we sent an army anywhere and 100,000 people died in an hour?
1944.
Yeah, but that's a while.
I'm surprised it wasn't like a draft.
That was literally like that was a day. This clearly
longest day. That day was the longest.
I think Dustin's gonna use the C word.
It wrapped up. It wrapped up tidily in 2.5 hours.
I like you. You don't even want to use the word because it's a naughty word. Thank you for respecting people enough not to say the word.
Mom's on Facebook with me. I don't have a choice.
Peter Brick is this.
Yeah, that is literally the only word I will never say in front of my mom. Or
Tammy
dad.
Brick is going to be so upset.
Is she going to listen to this podcast?
I don't know. She was excited when I mentioned it. Like, oh, my baby's on a podcast.
She doesn't know what a podcast is.
Oh, man. Yeah. I swear on literally every episode of the podcast. I just swear literally on every episode of the podcast.
You should just be like, hey, your mom's going to call you and be like, yeah, can you, like, so what? Like, I buy a CD of it?
You give me $100.
Do I get it on like a mini disc? How do I listen to it?
How do I put on my iPod?
Yeah. My iPod.
Yeah, and you keep paying my car insurance.
You cunt.
Tammy Brick's a saint.
Yeah. That's it, yeah. Notice I didn't say that about your mother.
Actually, Dustin did say it. There's no way that was anyone else.
Kick some whole sack.
Why did this movie not do even more money?
Probably because it was like a winter fall release.
And rated R.
So, yeah, and that too. It sucks, but that unfortunately is... I feel like towards the back end of the 90s, the rating was legit a thing that started to affect box office. If this had been a summer release... Although, what year did Men in Black come out? Was Men in Black 97?
Maybe 96, 97.
I'm curious.
Pretty sure it was a summer. It had to be a summer movie because he had like the 10 straight years of summer blockbusters.
Men in Black absolutely was. Yes, Men in Black definitely was. Yeah. I'm really surprised that this wasn't.
Yeah, 7 Pounds, maybe not summer release. That was the right. Is that the movie?
Huh? 7.5 pounds.
Oh, 6 Degrees of Separation.
The movie where Will Smith did some dramatic stuff and no one liked it.
Oh, 12 Pounds.
Twelve Pounds.
That's what it was.
I was off by 5 pounds.
I was thinking Pursuit of Happiness. That was...
Oh, yeah, with a Y.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad and I went to go see that.
That's
Even my dad was like, why did we go to that?
Yeah.
Okay,
that is so sentimental.
So here's your big summer blockbusters it would have been up against. The Saint, Anaconda, Volcano, First Austin Powers, Fifth Element.
Ooh.
Oh, no, this is May. Lost World, Jurassic Park. Con Air.
Ooh, yeah.
Batman and Robin.
Put the bunny back in the box.
Face Off. Oh, man.
I forgot all about this.
Nick Cage doubled down in June with Con Air and Face Off. Yeah, Men in Black was July. And then you had Contact, George of the Jungle, Air Force One. And then August you had Spawn. The first Air Bud.
Air Force One.
My first rated R movie.
Air Force One?
Yep.
Did you sneak in?
Event Horizon. Rental. So yeah, you had a couple of things it would have been up against, but I feel like you could have found a weekend where it would have met some kind of demand.
All of these movies are just like, oh yeah, this is what my dad allowed me to rent in 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a year,
but
6 months later.
I did see George of the Jungle.
But also, almost all of those movies were financial successes. Spawn, probably not, but it's a terrible movie regardless.
Does it say anything about how well this movie did overseas, or was that not like as big of a thing in the 90s as it is now?
It just says box office in general is 121.2 million. Let me see if there's more detail.
Just so the listeners know, Dustin is actually just pulling these numbers from his vast knowledge in his brain.
Yep.
He is not looking them up. It's pretty astounding.
He's not using a tiny mouse to do
there
so.
There is no... A tiny mouse that is 1/50th the size of his hand.
Okay, now you're just being hyperbolic.
It's 1/9th.
Yeah, no, it's 121.2 just in general. It doesn't list the world box office versus...
I feel like I might have rented this twice, and I might have rented it on VHS.
I mean, it certainly came out in a time where that was a possibility still.
So. So VHS was a way that we used to watch stuff on.
Okay. Yeah. No, keep going.
It's like a DVD, except crappier.
Oh, and you had to rewind?
Please be kind, rewind. Yeah. Or they charge you a 29 cents or something.
I just assumed that Peter Brick didn't start watching movies until the last VHS was made.
I had VHS. You? We have the original Star Wars on cassette.
The original or the 97 Special Edition?
Special Edition.
Okay.
It came in like the gold and black case.
Yep.
Special Edition.
VHS.
Very exciting.
With the extended Jabba's Palace number.
Which was written... Which was written by John Williams' son.
Oh.
So it's like this great passing of the torch. Hey, son, it's your turn. Oh, you're going to do a terrible job? Thanks.
I'm starting to forget what this podcast was about.
This is fascist talk.
We're still in the same ballpark. One of the other things we talked about, Andy mentioned during the movie his love for the track, was it Clendathu Drop?
Mm-hmm.
Scored by Basil Poledouris, who also did the score for RoboCop, a couple other films.
Also has great leaves.
Is that?
Basil leaves.
Oh my god, get out of here. You get right the hell out of here.
Is that like a dubstep song, Clendathu Drop?
Well, the plan is...
spider noises.
We used to play that song, I was in this metal band, and we used to play that song as like our opening. So that's why I need like the Clendathu Drop. That's why I have it on my computer. That's why I know it very well. But the composer, he was like even in the RoboCop movies, like the RoboCop theme.
Yeah,
they had it in a bunch of different ways because it was like this anthemic sounding thing that could also be used in the tragic moments.
Yeah, you know, a motif.
Yes, a life motif. Actually, if you want to get it right,
I think it's a leitmotif.
When the eyes and E's go a walk, and the second letter does the talking in German. Boom, boom. Someone not only studied German for 2 years, they also took 2 years of music classes. Nothing.
Here comes a C word.
That C word. Composer.
I'm trying to see what other notable scores he did. He did the Conan films, Red Dawn. Of course, RoboCop, which we mentioned.
Red Dawn.
Oh, Quigley Down Under, you guys.
Oh, good.
Quigley Down Under.
A lot of life motifs there.
It's a real buildings roman. That's...
Hey, let's just continue saying big words surreptitiously.
Oh, guys, Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles. Don't forget that score.
You mean Crocodile Dundee 2?
That would have been Crocodile Dundee 3, actually.
Oh my god, they
went
past
three
two.
Crocodile yeah. Dundee?
Crocodile Dundee 3, now that's a knife.
Yeah, Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles was made, I think, like a whole decade after the second one. Because that was like, 2001 was kind of that start of where you're like, oh yeah, let's start making movies years after the magic has passed. Blues Brothers 2000, yeah, we'll roll the dice on that.
Oof. They, more cars getting crashed, that made that movie okay. Also, the original Blues Brothers, let's be honest, not that good.
Are you?
I recently saw it in the middle of Chicago.
I'm going to punch you.
In front of the
Chicago. Oh, I think Peter's going to say the C word, guys.
Yeah. Guys, I'm a big fan of the Blues Brothers as an idea. And then you watch the movie and you're just like, oh, someone was on a lot of coke and they couldn't do the best movie that they possibly could.
I second Peter's.
No. I have watched it like two or three times since being younger, being like, huh, so this is just a bunch of like cool action sequences and musical numbers. Everything else is awful.
Carrie Fisher's pretty great in that movie.
I agree.
Yeah, but
the last chase scene.
Yeah, it's okay. And like, yeah, I'm like,
what do you mean it's okay?
Like,
I just want to sit back and watch Peter get fired off.
You'll notice I haven't said anything in a while.
Finally. And I certainly did this to get Peter going. Peter actually has a Blues Brothers tattoo on his neck.
For the listeners at home, Peter is turning green and just straight fucking hulking out right now.
Peter,
there goes his clothes. He's gonna have to go to the show naked tonight.
Peter has just
don't like me when I'm mad.
Peter has just put on an outfit that makes him look like he's a member of the Specials. Everybody,
but what?
Oh, don't freak Scott. Don't freak Scott.
Yeah, the 2-tone ska suit.
Boom. Ska. That's a thing.
Probably the most accurate ska I've ever heard.
Ska, Webster's. Now, it's a thing.
Alright, let's bring it back to Starship Troopers.
Yeah,
I think we've hit on the majority of points we wanted to. Is there anything else I particularly wanted to say before we wrap up with our favorite moments from the movie?
I'm ready for favorite moments.
I'm ready for favorite
moments. All right, hot dog. Tim, let's start with you. We'll work around the table. Favorite moment.
My favorite moment was when Denise Richards stole the spaceship, and those two guys just ran. It's like, oh, come on, what are we doing, guys? She just takes it for a joyride. They're clearly nervous in the back.
Aw, dang.
I got the idea that, like, they, like, whoever gets there first gets to drive.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is this? Where anywhere in the military is that a thing? Hey, boss, I know you're better at driving these spaceships, but guess what? I got in the driver's.
I called shut.
Oh, man, not okay.
Oh, mom's going to be so mad.
Gomer Pyle is involved.
Yeah.
My
favorite moment was when the captain of the ship, the cheaper Lucy Lawless, when she like is running with them and then trips and falls and then a huge gate drops on her and kills her. And I'm like, this is the future. It's going to have pressure sensors.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, oh crap, I'm on someone. Go back up.
I think normal garage doors have those.
Yeah. We've had that technology since the 70s.
That scene in Scream when Rose McGowan gets killed in the garage door.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, that's like a 10 horsepower engine.
Yeah, no garage door is that heavy. Yeah. I know, my mom accidentally closed the garage door on me once.
It happened.
No, it happened, but then it came back up real quick. It was like, oh, there's a
The garage door is just like, whoop!
You know what? I think if your mom closed the garage door on you, you're allowed to swear. I think that's the trade-off.
Damn
that's
it,
how parenting works.
Damn it, mom!
What parents just don't understand.
Oh, shit, dang, heck, mom!
To be fair, I snuck under the garage door.
What were you doing?
Oh, just messing around.
doing garage door stuff.
Just, being a kid.
I think I was playing...
Just having a goof.
I was just playing Indiana Jones or something.
Yeah, like even in, like, my parents' place in, like, in the early, like, late 90s, early 2000s, had that little, like, laser sensor thing.
Yeah.
So if anything's in the way, it's like, I'm not coming down.
I'm not doing that.
My friend in elementary school kept telling me his dad invented that laser. It's like, bullshit.
You would not live in this summer.
Can you imagine that guy now at a bar?
Yeah.
Like, that guy's at a bar, he's just like, hey, so, you know where I come from? My dad invented a little thing out of the garage. and prevents your car from getting crushed. So,
I saved Peter Brick's life.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then he didn't have to call his mom the C word.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Classy lady.
What was your favorite part of it?
Anytime there's a military movie and they're going through the part where everybody's in boot camp. That's my favorite part. That was my favorite part of Full Metal Jacket. That's my, like, Tigerland. I mean, the whole movie Tigerland is boot camp. But that was my favorite segment of the movie, is when they're in boot camp and they're just getting their asses handed to them by the drill instructor.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch.
Good old Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
But Rico doesn't grow until his love interest dies.
Yeah, that's true.
He grew a little before that.
Yeah.
I guess when the guy got shot.
Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. And then we decided to renege on his resignation because, you know, revenge.
Yeah.
We gotta get those bugs.
Yeah. I'm from Buenos Aires and I said kill them all.
Kill them all.
Really quick, not Lucy Lawless, was Brenda Strong, who apparently was in every episode of Desperate Housewives. That's her big thing.
Hmm.
And then she...
Weird that I wouldn't know that.
Well, no, I'm trying to figure out what else she's done, and that seems to be her most notable role, was that she was in that. And then I looked down at her other credits, and she plays a completely different character in Starship Troopers 2, Hero of the Federation, which I always think it's weird when franchises do that, when they bring back an actress or an actor from the first one. Like,
what else is...
We'll hope nobody notices.
What else is... What other ones?
A whole bunch of stuff. She was in Dallas.
No. I mean, what other movies do, like, bring back a person and throw them in, like, the later...
Smokey and the Bandit 3 did it. They cast Jerry Reed as the Bandit. The Burt Reynolds role. And there have been others. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but
one,
I know...
So there's been one.
One is impressive enough to me.
Yeah.
There have been others. All right, my knowledge is only so encyclopedic.
Now, listen, if only you had a computer or something in front of you that could help you out with some of these
questions. Look, we're already running long, Dustin hasn't watched. I am about to bring out the C-word again.
The C-word is closing comments.
Closing comments.
For me, my favorite moment... I also was a huge fan of the boot camp segments, and Clancy Brown is very good in that. I also, anytime Michael Ironside was on screen as Radchick, I thought that was great. And also, I really love the mimicry, like the transformation of Johnny Rico into Radchick by the end of the movie. Like, where he's literally just verbatim going through the same routine that Ironside gave him when they first joined the Roughnecks. So those are mine.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Cool. We're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, Tim, Andy, and Peter for coming on the show.
Yeah.
Hey, you're welcome.
Thanks for letting me sleep on your floor.
Absolutely.
Thanks for letting me sleep on the couch.
Absolutely, guys.
Yeah. Hi, Mom.
Hi, Tammy Brick.
Hi, Tam.
Sponsor the podcast.
18 Bricks.
It's been a lot of fun. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening to How Have You Not Seen This. If you enjoyed the podcast, like the page on Facebook. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also leave us a rating or a review. If you're interested in donating to the podcast, you can do so through the PayPal link at the Podomatic website, howhaveyounotseenthis.podomatic.com. You can also send any questions, comments for the show to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.